So just before I begin, are there any questions or anything to share? So you've heard about belly from other places or no?
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
So I don't know about the other places.
Okay.
I don't know if...
Okay.
Okay. So there's a lot of traditions, and some people still would say focus here, focus here, focus here, with the breath and the nostrils. Focus in the whole body. because I don't go around, I don't know the trend, so it's interesting that at least for you it's coming, the belly. It could be your personal trend. It could be that you, because it maybe is helpful for you, you happen to come across it now. Could be. There have been traditions for hundreds of years about this belly thing. One simple part of the answer is farther from the head is often better. Now that our heads are so active. And our perfectionism and sort of trying too hard for many people is up and forward. So just having some place that's down and in gives a chance for another direction to start to come back alive. And then the kind of reason that's harder to explain or describe, but in a way is also simple, that even though in this area there's a lot of our knotted, tangled programs, trauma, etc., is also here. But it's also an area that we can say is, in women, there is the womb. And in this area in the human being, some traditions like the Jinshin Jutsu tradition of like where we have our hands, this area of the body is connected to the most subtle that still are individual. It's like this area of the body is connected to a flavor of energy, a kind of experience, a human experience that's still just me here, simple, but the most subtle. So some people might call it soul or deep okayness, where we are. I'm not trying to define soul as deep okayness, but just giving different language. Deep okayness, being deeply okay no matter what happens. I've mentioned a few times on the retreat. The texture is silky, they say. It's the quality of, in the poem, abandon as in love or sleep, like there's, that is connected to this area of the body. So by connecting to this area of the body, we might happen to bump into some of that. Or we can just say that sort of nourishing, supportive space, like a womb. So we're getting into that touch with that nourishment that we need, that we've been looking for everywhere, that we have. So those are some reasons, but it's still just the best suggestion I can make, knowing that the best thing for each person, that we each have to find out. It's not, if you really feel connected here or in your butt or in your feet or in the whole body, then that's where you feel really connected and that's where you go. So I don't consider like this is where you should go. This is, if you're not sure what to do, be here. if you don't feel anything here, keep hanging around and see, give it some time, etc. But meanwhile, maybe you need something you can connect to that you can feel, maybe the back. Maybe. But those are some of the reasons, if we want reasons, for why this is helpful.
Is it under 2 inches below the navel, or is it really below the navel? Sometimes it's like a pelvic bowl.
Yeah. So it's anywhere that works for you. So there, people talk about a thing that's 2 inches below the navel. That might be a good place for some people. For a lot of people, there's a long time that it's really, I call it low belly, pelvic bowl.
Yes.
For some people, it's more in the back. So, but down here is a good, nice, far away from the head. We can kind of be under all the waves and surface more easily.
Strangely, when we are connecting here, then also the head keeps on working.
Yeah, it keeps on going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, for a while.
For men, this part, the lower body, is different?
In this...
For me, it's quite difficult to connect, and I've been trying.
Yeah.
So I have somebody there where I meditate,
mm-hmm.
The facilitator, talks the same view. And not concentrate here, it's too close on the head. Let's find another side in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And he also talks about the hara, is what you suggest.
Yeah.
And I've been trying before, but it's not easy for me. Maybe it's different or not?
There would be differences between male and female, but I think the benefit is still there for male and female. And I think one of the unfortunate things about conditioning for people in male bodies is not allowing you to experience this. the kind of way that males tend to be trained to be in their bodies. Even people who do lots of yoga, like it can be actually really hard to, but very worthwhile to connect. So when you know you need something more easy to connect with, this is too hard to find and your mind is going crazy, so then something else. But whenever you think of it, coming here, I would still recommend. It's not that it's easy for women and hard for men, or it's not that it's accessible for women and hard for men, or good for women and not good for men. It's a bit hard for everyone because it's more of a subtle place. But the way I see most men, like to totally generalize, the way that our culture has taught you to be in your body doesn't give you access to this. And so it means to me that it's even more worth going through the frustration, disappointment, patience, etc. of landing here, feeling whatever you can, maybe putting a hand sometimes so there's a little bit more to feel. Yes, hara, but like not thinking about, okay, my hara, my second chakra, my whatever, like what do you feel here and feeling it whenever you can. I think it's very, very, like wonderfully helpful. Also in a way that's beyond male and female, and also in a way that's specifically for men, what I've seen over the years. Specifically what I consider to be a kind of more masculine unfolding of the body and the mind. This is really important. So I'd like to ask anyone who has been in so many Dana talks about generosity, before I say anything, if you want to say anything of why it's important, or what you like about it, or what you hate about it, or whatever. So we're going to be talking about generosity, including how the retreat is organized around that, but also as a way of living. if anyone, now I give you one chance and I'll ask you again, you have time to feel if it comes more clear. People who've been on the retreats like 10 times, 20 times, 10 years, 20 years. Anyone?
It's, I haven't heard about, I mean, as you're saying, I have been to 2-3 retreats earlier, but not this talk, but what I feel is that the basic thing that we all know, maybe everybody by now, you know, that we are all connected in one core. Mm. So, you know, that by sharing, that oneness increases, that love increases, and that the feeling of, you know, being one, that increases. Mm. One of the things that I can see.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I think what she says, it's just a really awesome community, and it's really nice because I helped out last year to just participate, which I really, really enjoyed.
Mm.
And I think the second week was challenging, but it's I mean, yeah, you can really feel like there's such a community, and also experiencing Gemma, and then you, just, you know, things fall into place, and you're like, oh, okay. And I mean, I already have 2 events planned for this summer. And I was actually thinking about help. I was actually supposed to help out at the women's retreat, but I mean, we're with a big group, so I might just participate, which is, yeah. And the other group is just a whole different dynamic of having fun and cooking and meals and.
You mean when you were in the kitchen in Holland in the retreat?
Yeah, we're already planning on doing that this year. Like, okay, if you're coming, okay, then you also have to come, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like a thing now, part of my life, which is really, really nice.
Mm. Good. So it's nice to hear when she's talking about working in the kitchen. Were you on the retreat in Holland with Gemma last summer? And her description is giggles and having fun. It's actually lots of work, and it has to be on time, and it has to. There's the vegan and the gluten free, and it's pretty complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's cool to hear, and it's exactly the kind of spirit of Dana, generosity of what could sound like too much work before we do it. By being in it, it is too much work, but it's still fun. So, and that it's by participating and letting the participation show us that, teach us that being all the way in is really a good place to be, a good way to be.
But the other place is also nice. I mean, it was really hard work, and in the beginning we were like, oh, there's so much food. How are we going to cook this, you know,
yes.
all these days? How are we going to manage for 40 people?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
But each day was like a whole new adventure, and like also we got so much back from everyone,
yeah.
and like so much love, and like
yeah.
eventually you weren't even thinking about eating it yourself. You were like, oh, I'll maybe take a bite.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So nourishing to prepare the food that you can forget to eat. Exactly.
Somehow, I have felt like, you know, together action is somehow more enjoyable, more fun than when you're, you know, alone in the house.
Yes.
In the family also, if everybody is working,
yes.
it gives a different feeling all year.
Yeah. Yes. Great. Exactly.
I just wanted to add that, although
a little bit loudly.
Although, like, in a retreat, you can... moments of absolutely feeling what has been said. I think Dana can be really difficult as well, like for many people and for me.
It can, I'm sure they can't hear you.
It can also be really, really difficult. And like, even yesterday, I said to Jaya that, you know, I just actually had this moment where I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that I've been here for 3 weeks, and her and Annetta and the staff have literally just asked for nothing for 3 weeks, just literally asked for nothing. But then when it comes to Dana, it still can be so difficult sometimes to just, I don't know what it is, it's like working with that,
yeah,
the trust thing.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, although it is beautiful, we should also like work with the...
Yeah, resistance.
The resistance,
yeah,
to it as well.
Yeah. So if I may say, Jodi G, because she was one of the several of you that have been helping with my son, thank you very much. Speaking of working together, hopefully was not only enjoyable for Jodi, but she found that playing with my son, she had that feeling, not yet being a mom herself and not necessarily having an easy thing with her own mom. So experiencing that, a feeling of wanting to give anything or everything to him, something like that. And then realizing that similar feeling of us on the retreat, now you can hear like that, it's that similar feeling of wanting and being willing to give anything or everything. And so receiving that and giving that is a stretch. And then also yet when it may come to the time, so in the if you haven't been through this before, there in the small meditation hall temple where we did registration before, there will be 3 containers to give donations if you wish, for the organizational expenses, for Annetta, and for me, the 3 containers. So I think what Jodi G is saying is even feeling how good it is to want to give everything or anything, to also be willing to receive that. When it comes to like facing the box with your money, that can be a hard moment. There's, I was remembering a story that one of my teachers tells sometimes. I think he told it as a Dana talk one time. And it's some story of being in church. And if you've never been in church, they pass this bowl and you can, they pass it to each person in the room and they can put something in or not, put some money in or not. And so someone sitting in the towards the back of the room and the plate is passing along the rows coming towards this person. And before, at first this person is like, wow, I'm so inspired, you know, I want to give $100 or whatever. I want to give everything in my pocket. I want to give, write a huge check, whatever. And then it comes 3 rows closer, and then the person's like, well, maybe I'll give 80. And then it comes 3 rows closer, maybe I'll give 20. And then it gets to the end of his row, it's coming toward him, and he thinks, well, actually, I can't give anything. And by the time the plate comes to him, he thinks of taking something out. So please don't do that, is the way my teacher tells it. So, but yes, to leave room for that part of the mind that,
yeah,
can go towards feeling small and poverty, and I'd rather, if I'm going to be a part of this, then I'd rather take something than give something.
One thing that comes to mind is like, I happen to land retreat here in India where it was so easy. And they say that somebody has paid for you.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you can pay for others to attend.
Yeah.
So that idea I really like. Here in this case, we know that this portion has been given for the ashram and this much has gone for these 3 heads.
Yeah.
So
no, it hasn't gone for the 3 heads. I'll explain.
Okay.
No.
So where has that gone?
Yeah.
I know.
What? So you gave 700 to the ashram, and then you gave 500 towards the organizational expenses. So what that is for Annetta and me, and the caretaker of my child, to stay in the ashram and eat. So that was our food and room. No, I'm not finished. And then also to get us here and get us home. That's basically. And then luckily, you didn't need to pay for the caretaker. That comes from somewhere else. So it's. I'm actually hoping that we may have enough next year to go, that then, not that you paid for it, but that other people have paid enough that Open Dharma could say, come. it's been paid for, and you at the end give what you can for the next one. I'm hoping that in the next retreat in India also, you'll only pay the ashram your fee that they charge for room and board, and everything else is already given from other people, and hopefully it can flow on like that. But we don't have that big of an organization, and we have not had that much money to be able to do that for quite some years now. So, and also it sometimes people are so overwhelmed by this right now. Overwhelmed. Some people feel overwhelmed at this point. Sobra pasala? Sobra, like in shock, kind of. And so it worked really well for all these years that the practical part is paid for and no one has to worry about it. And we don't have to tell you, okay, you gave that much, but the expenses aren't covered. You know, can you give more? Like, it's just done. And so the raw ingredients of the retreat are covered. The organizational box in the hall is in case you want to cover more for someone else's scholarship, that we had scholarships on this retreat that were covered by other people, whatever. If you want to pay something towards all the ongoing costs of the organization, so the accounting fees, the website where there's hundreds of recordings available completely on a donation basis, but it's not free for us, you know? So that's that organizational box. So you've paid for, like, where the balance sheet is at zero, we're good. That's fine. And then in terms of the actual retreat itself, all the work that Anettaji did beforehand and all the teaching, that is given by us and by people who came before so that we were able to be free to devote ourselves to getting this to happen and being here. So that it's like the meal, the chance to actually eat something, etc., is what we could give freely and is what was supported by people who came before. And even though I actually like this way very much, because it's kind of that part's done, and now this is really, there's no bills so much. Now it's really just a chance to feel what you'd like and can give, how you want to participate. If we do it fully on dana, there's bills, and they need to be paid, and it's a nice feeling if it's paid by the people who are here. It's nice if people can come who can't afford to pay, but anyway, so that makes sense. So, and if we feel how this tradition would have started, we can feel the things that you've said, that sense of oneness, how it's better, it works, it feels much more fun when we're doing it together, when we're all participating, when we're aware that we're all participating, when that's like in the structure of the situation. And also so that there could be teachings and I'm not like, well, I've got to go do some meetings, I'll be back, and then I could give you maybe I'll have time to give you a talk. But I can be fully here, I can do all the hours and hours of work before the retreat and also after the retreat so that it's can flow on. Anettaji is just beyond saying, I don't know how to say that, all that she's done and how and why she could do that. And it's to me the good example of one good reason for dana is that the work that's involved and required for an event to happen is actually unpayable, like literally. And that is why retreats now, when you pay for the whole thing, are so expensive, because it's so much work that you couldn't pay for it. Like, what she needs to do for this to happen, we could not afford. And then there's also that other side where if we were paying her, she probably wouldn't have as much fun doing it. If we were saying this much per hour, it would be different. It would be harder for it to be joyful. It could be, some people manage, but it would be harder to really experience it as for herself, as part of her own path and part of something that she's fully participating in. And so it's that the 100%-ness that we're all more allowed to be in, 100%. I can be 100% here, and Anettaji can be 100% in, you can be 100% here. And it's the 100%-ness that is the key. That is also what dana means. And that is the key in everything. All the teachings that have been leading up to that, the 100%-ness. Like, so it means noticing in your life where you tend to be able to feel 100%. You get so absorbed in dancing or writing or looking at the stars or playing with your kids or your friend's kids or your guitar or whatever. Or just looking at the tree or just being in the hammock or listening to the waves or whatever. There are those things where you are easily, it might be one thing or five things, that you're easily 100%. And it's so natural to us to be 100% that we often don't notice and value those. We don't realize that that is like the home of our transformation. And so redefining what our meditation practice and path is by starting to discover, and it takes years to really discover, oh, ever since I was a child, that was that quietness of 100%, or that was that joy of 100%, just in lying on the floor or leaning on the tree or drawing. And you say, oh, I'm not an artist, but you love to draw. And so then you never get around to drawing. But when you do, it's 100%. So letting where it's easy to be 100% have enough room in your life, and where you need the little bit of pressure to just do it, get through the membrane of resistance and just start drawing, or just lie down, or you know, do Jinshin or climb the tree or whatever. Just do it every day. Then finding who could be that friendly, you know, presence in the room that sees you not like walking everywhere but to the guitar. Everywhere but the guitar. Everywhere but the guitar. And just by that person seeing you not picking up the guitar, you just eventually pick up the guitar. And then it's done. Once you start playing, you're in. But the resistance to lie down, the resistance to rest, the resistance to walk, or whatever it is, that's so good, that you love, that takes over, that in a good way. What's the support or like slight pressure, maybe just of a presence in the room, like laughing silently that you're not picking up the guitar. So the help towards getting through the resistance to being part of generosity, which is what allows transformation. So dana means, the root is seed. And if we think of like there's the seed and it has its protection, it has its resistance, so that only in the right conditions it starts to grow. And then how can we get our seed into the right conditions? Like get so that it's wet long enough that that outer protection starts to get soft and allow the water in, and then the sprouting happens. So we keep trying to figure out how to sprout. What we need to figure out is how to let the water get through the protection and get inside, and then we sprout. And so the resistance to giving, the resistance to receiving, which is usually harder, the resistance to receiving is harder. So don't get so into giving that you forget to play with receiving also. Noticing when in the presence of love, there's like a shutdown, a freak out, a running away. In the presence of deep questions, inside or out, that there's a freak out. And then just feeling, how could there naturally be a way to stay wet long enough that the outer covering softens and the water gets inside? And then enjoy sprouting. Enjoy no longer being how you thought of yourself, but something else that's very alive.
Has a sense of freshness, and that surprises me because and also a feeling that every time the boundaries are pushed,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which doesn't mean that I give more than every time, because it also depends on how I feel. But it has that sense of boundaries being pushed in a new and fresh way every time, which is really nice.
Great. Cool. So part of the question is, softening resistance, but then, and letting the boundaries be pushed, but then, as Jayaji is saying, feeling that some boundaries are being pushed in a good way doesn't mean giving more money every single time. That's the one of the beautiful things about dana, is that it's not a predictable thing. It's part of it is the surprise that happens. So, part of your question is, isn't there some chance of having a boundary? And yes, but boundaries that do come naturally, and it's really important to experiment with that. Coming through the membrane of resistance and feeling what is the natural boundary. What says no? Where does a really healthy no come from? N-O. And when I say welcome everything, it's also welcoming your fear and your freaking out. Welcoming everything is also that. But it doesn't mean, someone wants to have sex with you and so you welcome them into your bed, unless you want to welcome them into your bed. If you do, then and it's safe and all that, like, okay, good, fine. But it's not, generosity doesn't mean you always have to give by quantity more and more and more. Being 100% and all in doesn't mean that you are more and more vulnerable to bad things.
What about aches and pains in the body?
Yeah, so that's a good example. Aches and pains in the body is often a really good chance to play with welcoming everything. So the actual sensation and my resistance to it. And usually, my resistance to it is what hurts the most. Not always. And sometimes that resistance softens and there's still some pain, but it's usually less. And so similarly in non-physical situations, where there's pain, discomfort. One of my teachers used to talk about the air pollution situation in India has come to the point where I'm really hoping and counting on some of the brilliance of Indians to do a huge change, because it's like a war, you know, in World War I when the discovery of mustard gas, you know, as warfare. Now it's like the air quality, not only in India, but certainly the top five are usually Indian now. Top five worst air pollution cities. But still, one of my teachers in Lucknow used to kind of joke a lot. It was one of my favorite things about him, was how much he would joke and always had a twinkle in his eye, no matter what he was talking about. And he would joke about how the mind that says pollution is the polluting. And I think now we need to do something about the pollution. It's not just, you know, let's make that inner shift. But it is really helpful and more likely that we'll come up with creative ideas to have clean air when I notice in my mind what it feels like being against the pollution. And even if I'm not against it, but the pollution, how that is polluting in the mind. That. And so welcoming everything allows that to unwind. And then it's much more easy to, a knowing can happen that that creature is dangerous or not dangerous. So it's not that I have to, especially in South India when we know there are dangerous creatures, creatures that maybe don't want to be dangerous but are, if they're afraid. And so we don't want to be that other dangerous creature that doesn't want to be dangerous but is when we're afraid, because then we will hurt each other. So it's not that your fear was wrong, but it's not that your fear helped you. It lost you some sleep or whatever. And it's not that we wish for the sound to be here, but it is. And there's not any other place we know of for a better place for a retreat at this time of year. So, yeah, we saw it from the walk yesterday, in case there was a huge mountain of rock, and it's a quarry. They're harvesting the rock or taking the rock, stealing it, whatever they're doing. And it's a certain kind of noise that is more likely to be disturbing also. And so we get the chance to feel our filter of just a simple sound that doesn't mean any harm, and how our system completely naturally takes it as harmful, makes it harmful actually. But it's from my side that I make the sound harmful.
But if you get to sleep, then you forget about everything in the world. But if you're awake,
yes,
then that disturbs.
If you're awake, you have a good chance for practice. To feel where in the, I'm not saying you're wrong. I wish that they would close, you know, and it was great when there were the 5 days there was not. I'm very happy that they were closed for 5 days. And it's a challenging sound. It's a challenging sound. And it's here we are in life. There are challenges. What are we going to do with them? Can we use that and then any other situation that may come along generously? Like, okay, what is the way that my body is getting tight listening to this? My stomach is turning acid. Like, what happens when I'm alarmed, when I'm against? And also that it's not wrong that there's an againstness happening. So I'm not against the againstness. Or if I am, I notice that. But then playing with, feeling, this is happening in here. The sound is just happening. And that againstness happens in here. The againstness doesn't fit. It's not deeply natural. It's not my deepest potential. So not that I'm wrong to be like feeling terrible or awake, but it doesn't fit me. It's not the most fitting. And so even sometimes when it's a challenge like that, it can be because it's hard, the best chance of feeling what's untouched by the sound, or to feel how the reaction to the sound is what's disturbing. And that's a huge insight. Okay, so the tradition of offering what's most essential as freely as we can. We can feel easily how that would have come into place. It just really makes sense. That what's most essential could be available, could be supported. We could then all be able to take part in that. That it could be available. So how could we make that be available? Is that everyone gives what they can so that it can go on. That's all. It's most essential, so it shouldn't be in a store. It's more essential than food, it's more essential than water, it's more essential than air. So what could make it be available more that we all need to support in some way? Mostly by continuing your practice. That's the main thing, being generous with your practice. And in whatever way, sending a poem And certainly the financial part is an aspect. So right now the way it works is that I do receive enough support that I can live on it, and I have since I began, and also before I began teaching. I've been receiving enough support that I can just do it fully. If that wouldn't be enough, maybe I would stop teaching, maybe I would still teach when I could. There's not a requirement that it continues this way. I want you to really start to feel how different it is, that there's not any sense of debt. But happily, the retreat is given to you already. That's done.
Any sense of?
Debt.
Debt, okay.
Yeah.
And no debt. So that's
important. Also, there's no sense of debt. We haven't, used up anything. We haven't killed anything off. We've participated in something that has its own energy, and that energy gives more, as you were saying. We end up, by giving energy, finding more energy. So to me, what that means is that we're getting into the deep nature of reality. Like I was talking about another law, that instead of we have this much energy, so we have to watch out how much we use in the morning so we have enough in the afternoon. It's a completely other realm. It works differently. It really does. By not counting, but feeling with care our situation, what is needed now, what isn't needed now. We don't give what we can't give. We do give what we can give. And then we find that we got more. Or we feel like we have nothing, but then still something happens. And life keeps sustaining itself, and we relax into that and pour ourselves into that. And so the freedom of you not having paid for the retreat, for the actual retreat, you paid to get us all together. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. And I'm really happy that we let this retreat happen also. That by your really diving in, and my really diving in, and Anetchaji really diving in, something could happen that can't happen otherwise. There's a chemistry that doesn't happen if we're oh, well, you didn't really pay me that much, so I can only give you the 10%, the B quality, or whatever. You're free, and I'm free, and Anetchaji's free, and then it's a chemistry. It's like a whole, the missing ingredient. It's what's missing. And it wasn't missing. So just now before breakfast, in the small meditation hall, there's these three containers that you're very welcome to give what you can into them. And it's really helpful if that happens before breakfast. So even if they start putting something out early, please do your donation thing first. And then you can continue in generosity, enjoying your breakfast and so on, receiving and giving. So it's just simply the money part about this retreat that we would ask you to do now. And the rest, everything else about generosity, keep doing the rest of your life. You'll go and Anetchaji will be there. And if you gave your valuables, she'll give you your valuables. And I will bring my computer and internet thing. So in case you want to give by internet, by PayPal or bank transfer, that's possible to any of us. This time we figured out a way that you can give donations to Anetchaji via Open Dharma also. So if you want to give a donation to Anetchaji and Open Dharma, you could do one and leave a note how you would divide it up. And if you want to give to me, it's a different thing that will be explained there. So the computer will be separate, and then in the room you go probably one by one, I don't know.
Yeah. So, there are some boxes.
Yeah, there's three containers, three, a basket, and a vase. Did I miss anything?
On a practice, as a currency.
It's fine, everything's fine, as long as it's accepted somewhere.
No 1,500.
As long as it's accepted somewhere, so not the old 1,500 rupees. The new 500s are around. We accept those. But yes, any cash that's acceptable is acceptable. Keep everything here because we'll be back in the hall again and we'll explain that what to do with them after.
And maybe silence.
Silence is continuing. So we wish for this like feeling now bringing in the whole subject of money as well, including that and like welcoming that into the retreat and your own reactions also welcome. Most of us have been cheated around money and most of us have been conditioned to be cheated around money. So with advertising that we're willing to suddenly buy something that we don't need. And so basically give our money somewhere that we didn't need to give it, that a place that's not working for the benefit of all. And we do it over and over again, not even noticing. And so naturally we have some reactions around money. So bringing that into the retreat, letting it feel you, you feeling it, and doing what your best guess is. It's just an experiment. Your best guess.
Another question?
Yes.
The other retreats, are they also on a at a place where are so much noises? I ask this because I could handle it, and it was a challenge, but it was okay that it was a challenge. But I really have the wish, the deep wish to be at a silent place.
Yeah.
It's really a deep wish. No?
Yes, yes.
And I like it so much. Yes. I knew it from me when I'm in Norway and there's snow.
Yes.
And this is a sort of silence I can't describe. No?
Yes, yes.
And when
so
I'm alone there, going from hut to hut, and I have the deep wish on a retreat that there's a silence and no smartphones, that somebody...
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I ask because I want to know it.
Yes. So you, for my own retreats and Jim, our own Open Dharma retreats, I guess this is the noisiest place. I'm trying to think. The place we go in, next in India has lots of noise of birds, right?
Yeah.
And also barking deer. Barking deer.
Oh. No.
And then now, because like so many other places in the world, but in India, it gets more and more crowded. And even though the ashram is huge amount of land, 380 hectares or something, so huge, there are other people, and they started to have loudspeakers sometimes now in the last few years, but not like this. But I know, I'm very aware of not being able to promise anything, especially in India. It's such an amazing place that it feels like any time might be the last time that it's so amazing. It's so much forest and green that it's one of the best places for bird watching, people who are bird watchers and go to the bird watching places and also come to Sattal, say Sattal is better, which means in globally it's an amazing place. But it's because of being so amazing, it's like a really rich person sitting somewhere in the middle of a desert, like it's just something is bound to happen eventually, and every year is a grace. In terms of other centers, I assume like a regular meditation center does everything they can to have as much silence as they can. But I also know that life, how life is. We had a one day retreat in Israel at Odelia's place, and we had just finished a longer retreat, but we offered a one day for people who couldn't do more than that. And it's a quiet area. It's in the countryside. And 15 minutes before we started, we got the news that a neighbor had a water issue, some problem in the water supply, and they'd be doing some work on that. But so they would be turning off the water. So we hurried and put a bunch of water for the day, and then thought we had covered the problem. But then as we started, right, like they couldn't be closer. It was like having that machine, a smaller version of that machine, right there. Mm-hmm. They started when we started. It was in Israel where they have more close experience with war. And it was a sound that was easy to remind them of war. Like it was the same sound of when they were building whatever 2 years before with a war. But it's not a war. And I was surprised that people stayed. It was really, there were some pauses in the noise, but it literally started with us and ended with us. We were 9 to 4, they were 9 to 4. Sometimes these things happen, and somehow, amazingly, it was really fruitful. So I feel for that, like, that love of silence, yes, like, go for it. And it's bound to also bring sometimes these other situations. I have that love of silence too, and I would love to share it. And so people, we organize and get together for a whole day of silence. Mm. And sometimes there was nothing to do. Mm. There was nothing to do. It was a restaurant. They needed them. It was like, we can't say no. We invited 50 people here for one day. They planned it for 3 months. Like, you can't, no, they need water. So the love of silence can then actually teach us in a situation of noise that the love, it doesn't mean don't also go to Norway and snow. And I love teaching in Finland there the last couple of years in snow. It is amazing. But the same love of silence can, even when there's noise, help me stay just leaning towards what is the quality of silence, even when there's noise, and what is that loves that so much that it will stay there and not be bothered with this. Mm-hmm. It is that is potential, and sometimes with noise is actually when we find how much we really love silence. Not because I can't wait for this to end, but even when this is happening, even because this is happening, that gives me the chance to feel. What I really love of silence is not the outer acoustic experience. It's a quality that reminds me of. And I can stay with that quality and that love of that quality. So close, that's the too close, like so close. So it's not as a guilt when we are upset about noise and we can feel how it affects and so on. I agree when, especially that phone noise, I was going to ask the ashram again to please, like, we're in silence, at least not phones near the hall. I agree with yeah, okay.
Yes, and it's not that I want to
complain,
criticize,
complain.
It's more that yes. I have this wish and yes. I want to know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Keep the wish in every way. I agree. Okay. So please feel free and enjoy giving, and then breakfast.